Well, here's a question no one else is asking except our next guest. How many Americans have been killed in Ukraine? How many Americans have been killed in the war in Gaza, in the Middle East? Well, this is a story they don't want to talk about, and they certainly don't want to bring attention to the fact that American soldiers are being killed in Ukraine or in the Middle East right now. Where's the cover-up? Our next guest spent 22 years working at the CIA. He's written four books on how the United States shouldn't be involved in these wars in the Middle East, how the United States shouldn't be involved in this war in Ukraine. This is probably not a popular subject at his former place of employment at the CIA, but now he's trying to warn all of us that we should keep our nose out of these other countries' business. My guest is Michael Scheuer, 22 years at the CIA, and Michael and I go back many, many years when I had a chance to interview him many, many times when I worked at Fox News. Great to see you, and thank you for the work that you're doing. I mean, this is a rare commodity for you to have worked in the federal government and been speaking out against us sticking our nose where it doesn't belong. Welcome back to the show, Michael. Great to see you.
Thank you, sir. A pleasure to be back. I'm grateful for you for the invitation.
How did you come to, first of all, we'll get into the American piece of this in a second, because you just wrote a blog post about, Americans being killed in these war zones that we're not hearing about on any newspaper or any nightly broadcast in the United States. It's being kept from us. I want to get to that in a second. But how did, first of all, working 22 years at the CIA, did you come to this way of thinking this can't be a popular position? I mean, I think the point of the CIA is to be involved in other countries. And here you are saying we need to keep our nose out of this.
Well, I spent, for my sins, most of my career working on Afghanistan or terrorism. And I saw what intervention could do for the Russians. We really didn't win the war in Afghanistan. We just armed the people who beat the Red Army to dust, really.
In the 1980s.
In the 1980s. And I have always been of the opinion, since I was at university, part of my dissertation was on this issue, that America does not have good diplomacy. It is not cognizant of the world. We don't know how other peoples work. And since the end of World War II, our foreign policy consists of providing bribery to foreign countries and being arrogant. And so we never win. We haven't won a war since 1945. We went to Afghanistan and spent 20 years because they didn't realize the major thing we had to do after we were attacked on 9/11 was to close the border. Because what bin Laden wanted to do is never to have to do 9/11 again. It's too much of a problem, too much of a risk, too much of a risk that it'll be stopped ahead of time. So I wrote in one of the books, I wrote, for the American people, I have to understand that everything we do in Iraq or in Afghanistan against al-Qaeda is pointless if you don't close the border. And I think we're seeing that today. I've always had a certain sympathy.
And you mean because, well, we say this on the show quite a bit, the massive destabilization of these other countries. The United States goes in, destabilizes Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, Sudan, you name it, Honduras, Nicaragua, whatever it is. And then, of course, our borders are wide open and those individuals then flood into the United States. Is that why you're saying that?
Well, that's part of it. Yes, sir. But I'm saying that only an idiot would believe with an open southern border that we're not getting significant numbers of al-Qaeda and ISIS people into this country, along with the Iranian intelligence service, the Chinese, the Russians, anyone else who is an enemy of ours, or we've designated as an enemy of ours. So what we're doing is just allowing enemy forces into the country. I think the biggest noise has been made about the Chinese, but we put ourselves right in the soup. We're going to be fighting a war here at home, I believe, certainly against the Islamists, because we've cut our last tie with the Islamists with what we've done with Israel. So it's a very difficult situation, and it doesn't take a lot of brains. I'm not a giant smart guy, but I'm certainly, I have a little common sense. And if you open your border, if you don't have a border, you don't have a country, as they say. And I think that's exactly right. We don't know who's here. We don't know how many guns they have. We know the Chinese are shipping guns in through Mexico over on the Pacific side of our country. So what are we doing? It's like not having a government.
We've documented on this show, of course, the military-age men, the Chinese military-age men, the Venezuelan military-age men, the gangs that are currently in Aurora, Colorado, and other spots that have taken over apartment complexes. We've seen what's happening with MS-13 and other gangs. We've certainly been covering what's happening with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Do you believe there's a large army now in the United States that's preparing something?
I wouldn't doubt it a bit. In fact, I think unless we assume the Chinese, the Iranians, and the rest are stupid people, they're here. You know, America has had, through God's gift, two mighty allies called the Atlantic and the Pacific. And people say now these days, well, those two oceans don't matter because of nuclear weapons and missiles and things. But the point is, the most secure point we've ever had was when we had mutually assured destruction with the Russians. And we saw nobody floating over to try to invade the United States at that time. And our border was reasonably quiet, or at least it was reasonably alert to people who are on the lists of terrorists or foreign military intelligence people. So, you know, Al-Qaeda knew. Osama knew. He couldn't float guys across the ocean with an AK, a bottle of water, on a pontoon. It's never going to work. What do you need? You need an open border. You flood the field, then you don't know which Muslim is respectable and which one is your enemy. And the way we've acted in Israel now, all of the Muslims in this country are more or less anti-American. Whether they'll take up a weapon, of course, is another issue. But I would be surprised if many would refuse to support armed people who were in their country to get back at us for what we've done from Kabul to Tel Aviv and that whole slot of territory. And you don't see anything in the media, but you don't see very much at all in the media, except on your program and several others, about foreign policy.
It's deeply disturbing. And one of the things that you raised is about Americans being involved in these conflicts. So the United States shoveling billions of dollars and arms, of course, and weapons into Ukraine in order to keep this forever war going against Russia, because that's what they want. Absolutely the same thing is happening in Israel. Heck, at the Republican National Convention, there were Israeli flags being flown at the RNC. I mean, as Colonel Douglas McGregor... Yeah, they own it. You're right. He said he couldn't remember in his lifetime a foreign country's flag being flown at an American political convention. It was unbelievable. Yeah. So weapons, arms are one thing, but United States soldiers. And I think you wrote a blog post, and I want to thank you for doing this, because no one is talking about this, which is American soldiers being killed in these different war zones right now. And why are we not hearing anything about it? Do you believe that Americans have been killed in Ukraine and in the Middle East as it relates to Israel and the Gaza and the war in Gaza?
Well, certainly if NATO forces are operating on the ground in Ukraine, unless we're there to pay them and change their diapers, there's going to be American soldiers on the ground. And we've heard since the beginning of the war of various conclaves of large numbers of NATO officers meeting in Kiev, supposedly in secure bunkers underground. And yet we know the Russians have claimed that they've hit two or three or four of them. And we never get even the notice in the Western press that something was hit, let alone was anybody killed. And we, from the first days, I think you mentioned McGregor and a couple of other people in Israel, we had special forces there from the beginning. And there was a number of them that got killed, which was more or less confirmed certainly by the enemy, or those we designate as the enemy, but also by McGregor and other people from their own sources. Now, my question is, we're fighting two wars, obviously. You can't deny it. What's happening to those that are being killed or wounded or maimed? Why don't we hear those numbers? And what about their parents and their wives and their sisters? Have those people not been informed and coerced to keeping their mouth shut? I don't know what the answer is to that, Clayton, but I know I'm not a fool and you're not a fool. And the idea that Americans are not getting killed in these wars is craziness. Even right. We know, even the government has admitted the Iranians have attacked U.S. forces in Iraq. For what reasons they're there, I do not know. But they've never told us who got killed, who got wounded. There's been no ceremony at Arlington, at the cemetery.
Right.
What gives? Like everything else right. In this country, the most important things are kept secret or distorted or just not mentioned.
Yeah, it'd be amazing to find out how many Americans have been killed there and what sort of relationship or what sort of deal the government has made with those families to keep it quiet. What are they told? Are they told that they were just killed in some sort of a training exercise? They're lied to? It'd be fascinating.
I don't have any idea, sir, but it would be truly remarkable, bordering on unbelievable, with all we've been doing militarily in Israel and Gaza and Ukraine, that we haven't had any casualties. Remember, just within the past 90 days, the Houthis claimed to have hit the Dwight Eisenhower, the aircraft carrier. No one ever denied that, but no one ever said there were casualties or the ship was hit. They just are silent. And
right. People
go about their everyday business, and I guess they don't pay attention. But that is the biggest problem. You know, non-intervention depends on chaining the president's ability to cause wars off his own hook. Only the Congress can declare a war, and they can't delegate it. These authority for the use of military force, that's a nonsense. That's unconstitutional.
And yet it's been in place. Yet it's been in place since, exactly.
There was one in 56 and then another one a decade later, and they keep using it. And all that does is allow the damn Congress to shovel off the responsibility to the president. And if he wins, you cheer. And if he loses, you damn him. They never get the blame. And the Congress was designated as the war declarer, so it would be the people's voice who spoke, and the people would know who was wrong if they declared war.
I like that you say your book is... Your book is not a political manifesto. It's more of a charting of the fact that non-interventionism has been, you know, a thoroughly legitimate American way of thinking going back to George Washington. And yet this term
while we were still, we're all politically correct now, as they used to say.
Right.
But for the most part, the early settlers didn't go looking for the Indians. The Indians came looking for them. They weren't going to stir up a hive when they were trying to create a community or a city or a town. And, it's been there since then. It's the American inclination is to leave the world alone as long as it leaves us alone. And we that worked well for over a century, with an exception in the Mexican War and the War of 1898. Otherwise, from the 1600s to 1898, we were just fine by ourselves. And
we create this sort of perpetual cycle, though, right? We're okay. If we stay out of other people's business, they'll leave us alone. And Americans can prosper, and the money can be reinvested here in the United States instead of $200 billion being sent to Ukraine. We could reinvest it here in the United States. But
yes,
because
sir.
Because we create a coup and provoke these countries, we know the military-industrial complex absolutely knows that by this provocation, it creates enemies. We now have an army of illegal immigrants in the United States on purpose, so that we can continue to fund this sort of endless cycle of war, this perpetual war on terror, whatever you want to label it. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And it's the president that's the problem. If you have a decent man as president or woman at some point, you won't get into these wars. But the rest of them kind of revel in the idea that they're the leader of the free world. And so if they're the leader of the free world, they have to prove it. And they get the CIA to cause problems, and then wars come. And as night follows day, then we have another war. It's a terrible situation for the United States to be in. It's unconstitutional. It's immoral in many ways. And it's also destructive of our own economy, of our own society, of trust in each other. But certainly, until you chain the president as he was intended to be changed, so he can't start a war against anybody without the Congress, unless we're invaded, or unless in the one case of Trump where he killed Soleimani because we were about to have our troops attacked in Iraq. I don't fully approve of that, but that's on the border of okay with me. But the idea that any president says, okay, tomorrow we're going to go anywhere from Grenada to Afghanistan without the Congress taking a vote so we know who's responsible for this war, we the voters. You know, did Congressman X from Southern Virginia or the Shenandoah Valley, did he vote for this stupid thing? That's the end of him the next time out. But there's no revenge here, or not, no revenge, no rectification possible as long as the president has the ultimate say.
Yeah, America's involved in almost like a dozen wars right now, and everyone wanted to praise Trump for not creating a new war. That's great. Yes, we don't need another one added to the list. However, we still have almost a dozen wars that the United States is currently involved in. It'd be nice if we ended all of them and brought our men and women home and closed those military bases around the world and reinvested in the United States. I know that's maybe an extreme position. I know that's what RFK Jr. said. That's why he's no longer in the race, I'm sure, because, you know, the powers that be certainly don't want to shut all that down, right?
Clayton, it's a common sense constitutional position. America goes to war when she's attacked. We don't go to war because a president or an agency of the government can get us into a place where it looks like to the bogus media, they can create the story that we need to go to Afghanistan, we need to go to Yemen, we need to go to wherever it is, where we really don't have a lick of interest.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation, Michael, and I would love to have you back on. I think our audience, you know, we're really trying to, I think we're tapping into a large contingent of Americans right now who are just fed up, absolutely fed up. And the hundreds of millions of Americans that don't vote, they believe that there's a uniparty in the United States, a perpetual corrupt uniparty. And I hope Americans are waking up and paying attention to what you're saying. We're going to link up your book in the show description if people want to read your most recent blog posts and books. Michael, it's great to have you here on the show. Great to reconnect with you after all these years. I love the work that you're doing.
It's been my pleasure, sir. Thank you for having me.